We aren't waiting for inspiration. We actively take steps that not only inspire ourselves, but also, at the same time, inspire others. Chaos happens. Here we choose to lead chaos rather than be led by chaos. We're sharing tips, resources, networks, and interviews that help you validate your ability to lead chaos and remain steady on. Are you ready to lead chaos? Let's do it. This is the Leading Chaos Podcast, and I am your host, Rhea Windcaller. Welcome to the show. When I started this podcast back in 2014, that's 4 years ago, I had an idea to call it Leading Chaos, primarily because I believed that if we don't take that step to lead chaos, it in turn will lead us. Well, now, so many years later, 4 years later in this term, it is still true to that very first day. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the CEO and founder of Response Training Programs, which is a conflict management curriculum. I do consulting both nationally and internationally and have been in this field for quite a long time. And leading chaos has been part of my, well, you might say, my mantra, if you will, for a very long time. You see, there's a lot of situations in life that can really get the best of us. And when you work in the field of a crisis intervention and conflict management, oh, it can be hard. Whether you are at work at a fire station, let's say you are emergency rescue worker in the mountaintops, or you are working in a school system, you're a parent perhaps, or maybe it's a nurse at a psychiatric facility. Everywhere we are in life, there is chaos, and it will not end. So what can we do? We want to lead it. And one of the topics that we're going to talk about in this here episode number 69 is a little bit of a switch on the leading the chaos, but actually celebrating what we do as leaders and what we're bringing forward into that relationship. And a big part of that, in even the most critical incident, is on how we cultivate inspiration. I started off with saying, we don't just wait for it to happen, we actually act upon it. And I'm going to share with you on how we do that. Before we get into the nuts and bolts on how one creates or cultivates inspiration, I'd like to share with you why I picked this particular topic. You see, for the past 30 years, I've been writing lesson plans that are really focusing on what folks don't necessarily do well during a crisis and help them change that habit. And you can imagine, for many very capable adults, it could leave you feeling a little bit like, oh man, I'm never going to get this right. And that's definitely not my intention. In fact, I know that you are doing the best you can. And not only that, you're kind of rock stars in your own right. Just showing up for work, if you are working in a potentially dangerous culture or climate, is amazing to begin with. And I know that people do not sign up for this easily. They do this because they are inspiring people already. So I wanted this year in 2018 to really offer up and kind of change my own approach to crisis and start focusing on all the things that we do right that not only helps us inspire others, but also inspires ourselves. So that's the first part there. And then the second part is this particular podcast and this lesson plan on this topic I dedicated to a very special person. His name is Yepa. And Yepa I've known for the past 10 years. I met him when I first went to the Netherlands and started working with a mental health organization there called Emerges. And he just, from the get-go, was just a kind of a comedic guy, I might say. Comedic and brilliant and poetic all at the same time. a little bit of his background. Yepa, I didn't really know how to pronounce that name. Now I could say it easily. But back then, I kept on thinking he was saying Yippee, Yippee. So I'd call him Yippee. And he would answer to that and kind of tease me about it. So that gives you a little bit of sense of his sense of humor. And he really shines in that way. You know, somebody who really makes you laugh. Well, over the years, not only did he become a response instructor, but in short order, he became in charge of the program at the organization. It became what I call an ARC-2. And an ARC-2 is an Advanced Response Crisis Intervention Instructor. And that's what he was doing up to just about a year ago. Last fall, tragedy hit on one night in October, October 13th to be exact, when Yepa and his son were riding their bicycles, which is very common in the Netherlands, and they were struck by a drunk driver. His son was 6 years old at the time and did sustain injuries, as did Yepa, pretty severe injuries, of course, some head trauma too, in a situation like that. Yepa was in an induced coma for quite a while, with broken leg and, you know, all that you can imagine in such a very difficult accident situation. But he did come out of it. And surprisingly to me, when I was corresponding to him, the fact that he could even remember who I was and remember a piece about response was just blew my socks off. This is all dedicated to somebody who has inspired me, not because of how he got through that tragedy, although that cannot be underestimated by any means, and the path that he's moving on into recovery, but who I see of and envision him as a man that he is, someone who would always say this simple phrase, and it's three words: it is possible. It is possible. He would say that when I would be kind of wrangling around, how do I integrate the concepts I'm trying to teach into the Dutch culture and the language and trying new approaches to age-old problems. He would always come back with, it is possible, and often with a little sly smile to go along with it. That inspires me so much. And it's something that I could take forward, and I hope that you do too, that when you're up against what really appears to be impossible, to breathe through and believe it is possible. So that's what that's about in terms of having this particular episode, why it came about, and what is inspiring me to bring it to you in this here episode number 69. When I come back, we're going to go into what exactly we could do to cultivate inspiration and create that possibility. The word inspiration has its roots in the Latin word inspiritus, meaning to breathe into, to inspire. Now, when you hear that term, to breathe into, you might have used it yourself, especially when people are having a hard time. I mean, what else do you have to offer? You might not even have a glass of water, but what we all have is a potential, in more cases than not, to be able to breathe. And by focusing on our breath, we are able to bring ourselves back into a somewhat rational state. And we've talked about this many times on this here podcast and certainly in the response program. So breathing into, that is something that I say more often than not when there is a crisis. When you can't do anything else, just breathe into it, to exhale. So we're going to try that right now. We exhale. And then inhale. And out. Yeah, breathing into it, it really works. It is a physical sensation that you can actually expel air, letting out all that is kind of like hanging on to you, kind of the clingers of life, and letting it go through your breath. And at the same time, it also gives us clarity because we're getting bountiful oxygen into our brains, into our respiratory system, and then into our brain, not our brains, our singular brain. And that is a beginning step. And I love the thought that a lot of people don't realize that to inspire is to breathe into something. That alone can kind of create an epiphany moment, can it? And this is something that we are constantly teaching in the response protocol, which is to always begin in any situation to begin with an exhale. That intentional breath, there's two things that happen. We exhale and we pause. The exhale itself provides a pause for us to decide what's going on. And in the protocol, we have the step where we then ask ourselves, am I safe? So I exhale, I pause, and I ask, am I safe? And that action just really encourages us to take the scene at hand and also to role model a calm, compassionate, and professional demeanor. Because if you are someone who is called to action and you are really role modeling that intentional breath, that is so, so powerful. And that in turn, well, there's a whole tumble effect there. That tumble effect is what happens when one does intentional role modeling. Now, there's role modeling. Like, we are role models. If you're a parent, if you're a teacher, whatever you do, we role model, whether we are conscious of it or not. But to be really intentional is consciously acting in a manner that displays a specific behavior or action. Now, the interesting thing we have to always remember is that the intention can be both benevolent and malicious. But for our purposes, we're looking only at benevolent, intentional role modeling. And because of that, we know that benevolent acts can inspire us and others, making intentional role modeling actually inspirational role modeling. I'd like to repeat that one more time. Intentional role modeling, when you're consciously acting in a benevolent manner that displays a very specific behavior or action, again, that is benevolent, it becomes inspirational role modeling. And to be inspired, or inspiration itself, is defined as feeling engaged, uplifted, and motivated by someone or something you witness. So certainly, if you are displaying inspirational role modeling, we are really being benevolent, and you are doing this in a very authentic manner, being an authentic self, that will have the potential to inspire others. And truthfully, I think you also inspire yourself, because you can't be authentic without really believing it and embodying that action. That's a perfect part of it. And inspiration is a positive emotion. And what are positive emotions? Well, they help us build upon our engagement in daily life. And at the baseline level, they motivate us to get up in the morning and participate in life. Inspiration at its highest level can actually be transformational. The broaden and build theory was developed by Barbara Fredrickson in the late 1990s and is commonly referred to in positive psychology. Well, just to let you know, positive psychology is the scientific study of what makes life most worth living. Geez, looking back now, I think I really should have picked that as my career move. What makes life most worth living? Aren't we always looking for that? And just to encapsulate an overview of Fredrickson's work on positive emotions, you could kind of encapsulate positive emotions as being something that opens one's mind, expands one's awareness, and cultivates one's own skill set that expands knowledge, skills, abilities, and relationships. So just to kind of take that out of the clinical, it's essentially opening up your own mind, expanding your awareness, and cultivating everything that you could have in terms of your knowledge and your skills and your abilities and your relationships with others. Sounds pretty good, right? Who wouldn't want to study that? What do we do with all that? Well, what I like to look at is if we're going to be moving forward and looking at our work and trying to see how do we cultivate this? How do we bring these positive emotions forward? We need to define what is a positive emotion. And here's a short list. To be happy is a positive emotion. The opposite would be to be sad. Awe, to be in awe of something, is a positive emotion. The opposite of that would be fear. Hope is a positive emotion. Despair would not be. Inspired is a positive emotion versus being unmotivated. And love versus hate. Well, we know love is the positive emotion. So that's a short list of positive emotions. Of course, we're also looking at the negative too, because sometimes in order to find the positive, you have to look at the negative. But keeping it on track with the positive right now, we want to think about, well, how are we acting upon that during a crisis? How do we inspire or cultivate inspiration during a crisis? And is there something that we have in our skill set right now in terms of the response protocol that we could continue to build upon and realize that actually it has potential to cultivate inspiration? And indeed, there is. The first thing we do to provide immediate gratification and satisfaction to a person who is in crisis is to do two things. One is to drop the content, and the second is to provide a crisis validation. Both these skills, as taught in response, provide instant gratification and satisfaction actually to the person in distress, because they allow that person to be seen and heard, and there is nothing more gratifying than that, especially when you're in crisis and feeling not seen and not heard. So let's look again at drop the content. By dropping the content and not criticizing an angry person's raised voice, we instead provide a compliment to the person in crisis via a crisis validation. So instead of saying, "Hey, Joe, you got to buck up here, man, get yourself together," or "Quiet down already, you're yelling, stop yelling." That would not be dropping the content. Focusing on the content, you know, the person yelling or what they're distressed in, is getting right into the story. And we know from so many experiences that when you get involved in the story, when a person is really agitated or angry, that it heightens the emotions further and basically fuels the flames of the anger and the situation. So instead, we say, drop the content. We get out of the story and lead the person towards the first goal, which is to make the scene safe. And we do that by using a crisis validation. And a crisis validation, now, if you recall, is very different than a clinical validation. In a crisis, we're dropping the content and we're immediately affirming everything that that person is doing right. So instead of saying, stop yelling, we say, I'd like to hear what you're saying. Please speak slowly. And we even shorten it often much further by saying, I want to hear. Speak slowly. I want to hear. Using a little bit of repetition in there. Or, thank you for coming to see me. That's an immediate affirmation of everything the person's doing right. And it creates a pause because people in crisis don't expect to hear that. And that pause is like an exhale of fresh air coming in where, what? You're not telling me to shut up? You're saying you want to hear me? Oh, it kind of drops that person down a little bit and I believe inspires them to be their better self. And isn't that what we want to do when we're doing an intervention, is inspire people to be their best self, to dig into that core of a person, the human in there, and bring it out in even the most darkest moments. Now, just going back into crisis validation, because there is often confusion on this. I've spoken about it before, but it's always worth repeating. A clinical validation happens when you're having a one-on-one with somebody in a setting where they aren't necessarily agitated. So a clinician might say something like, I see that you're upset. Now, that might work in a therapeutic set situation, you might say. But during a crisis, if I came up to you and said, I see that you're upset, John, you would probably say, I'm not upset. You want to see me upset? Or if you said that to me, I would tell you right now, I would not like to hear that because it's not very validating. It's kind of like stating the obvious. So I really try to define the difference between what happens in a clinical setting and what happens during a crisis. And if you could separate that and use the tools that are designed to be meant for specifically to a crisis, you're going to be so far ahead of the game. You're going to inspire yourself and others right from the beginning by doing that intentional role modeling. And focusing on the positive emotions. If you do something like what we're talking about here, to drop the content, provide that crisis validation, that person is going to be one more step towards being inspired to do something differently. And that's what it's all about. And that's the beauty of finding the possibility in even the darkest hour. So you could sit on that, and I hope it's something that you could practice right away. It doesn't have to happen during a crisis. In fact, if you are at home with your children, with your spouse, with your friends, when they come up and they say something to you like, hey, I just had this crazy day at work. I can't even believe I made it home still walking upright. You could do a little validation there. Instead of saying, oh yeah, and I had a crazy day too, you could return and say, wow, you're amazing. Good for you. That's a nice thing to practice. Just to affirm what the person just said inspires them to be have the feeling that we are seen and heard. And I'll tell you, that means so much. It's always, in these types of situations, the little steps we take bring us so much further ahead in the ball game of life. Well, that's it for now. I hope that you could practice this and you find it useful. And I'm sure there'll be another Leading Chaos podcast. Once again, it looks like I'm doing these once a year, but it's always a good time speaking with you. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Be kind, do great things, and believe that it is possible.